What is the biggest win that you've gotten so far?
It's getting the opportunity to pitch to Mercer and JP Morgan.
How much money have you raised today?
We've raised $100 million.
What's the biggest challenge you've had to overcome when it comes to running your business?
As artists, they don't think that it's made for us. What are we really even doing in this space?
You guys know Barbara Corran from Shark Tank?
Yes.
You heard her story, right? She lost over $400K because the person sent the email transfer.
What is the business model? How do you guys make money?
Two ways to make money: direct hire, contract to hire.
What's your opinion on AI so far?
Are we prepared for the number of people that are going to be jobless? And are we creating alternatives to what life is going to look like when AI is actually taking over people's jobs?
What are some of the roadblocks you've had in terms of like acquiring new customers?
A lot of people mistake antivirus with what we're doing. We're not dealing with antivirus.
Hello and welcome. I'm Alex.
And I'm Owen Osinde.
And welcome back to another episode of Hustle Over Everything. We're here at Collision.
And we're back. You know, you saw us last year. You saw us shut down the event. We're kind of shut it down again. Talk to some more entrepreneurs, some more businesses, and just like cover the whole place and show what a vibe this place is in Toronto.
Most definitely. We have some dope interviews coming up and some dope little connections, dope tips. So stay tuned. Let's go.
Let's get it, baby.
Today, we have Kyle Rose in the building. Kyle, what's going on with you, bro? How you doing?
I'm good, brother. How you doing, man?
Fantastic, fantastic.
Kyle Rose, man. As always. How's it feel to be on the Hustle of Everything podcast?
Listen, I've been waiting, so I'm glad I'm here. I appreciate you guys.
It's been long awaited. Long overdue.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Thank Most definitely. So, Kyle, tell us about Cyber AI.
Okay, so Cyber AI, we're a cybersecurity company and social enterprise, all about helping people stay safe online against fraud and scams, and offline, because we do realize that people get targeted offline as well. So just all about awareness and keeping people safe.
Okay, and a part of that is ScamBlocks, right?
Yes.
Can you tell us about that as well? What's that?
So ScamBlocks Plus is a web extension and app. It's almost like ad blockers, but strictly for scams. So whether you guys are on WhatsApp, Amazon shopping, anything you're doing online, we will track you guys and make sure that everything is going according to your safety and your online etiquette. And we make sure that, you know, we give you a trust score, we give you a breakdown. If you're anything that's approaching you that's dangerous, we cover it to make sure that you're safe.
So what inspired you to get into cybersecurity? You know, it's such a very intense industry. You know, you don't say I'm passionate about security, you know, you never hear that, but I want to hear from you. What prompted you to get into this space?
To be honest, and you're absolutely right. Like, I have a media background. I went to school for journalism, so it wasn't something I planned, but I got into it because, first of all, and it's a crazy story. A friend of mine had lost money. We lost money in an investment. I gave him some money. I didn't do my due diligence, and I got hit the hard way.
Got burnt,
unfortunately. Yeah. But I turned that into a company. The real kind of driving force behind it is when I looked on like Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, but particularly on Instagram, I looked at all these big social media platforms and they weren't really doing much to protect the everyday user. So it just started off as a social awareness, just a Facebook and Instagram page, just spreading awareness. We had 14,000 followers. Back then it was called Blockers of Scams. And then I met my co-founders through a business incubator and we turned it into a business.
And how long ago was this?
This was the fall of 2019.
2019, okay, and how's it been so far?
It's been good. It's been a journey. I've been hearing a lot of people's stories. I never imagined I'd be in this industry, people losing their 401ks, all this sort of stuff. Life savings. I mean, it's sad, but at the same time, I'm happy to be in an industry that can make a difference.
So what has been the biggest challenge when it comes to building this business up?
I would say getting people to understand, I guess, the realm of cybersecurity, because, you know, people hear that, they kind of be like, oh, you have to be techie. And I say, no, look at me. Like, I didn't have this background. Like, it's really just about being mindful online and offline. And I guess the hardest part of that is just kind of telling the general public, giving them an idea of what cybersecurity is and making it simple. Again, people think you have to be techie and go to school for this and that. And the challenge is for them to understand that, no, it doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah. I'm curious, man. I mean, you spoke about 401ks, a lot of losses. What's a story you could share that really touched you about someone who came and said, you know what?
Yeah.
I have this and this taken away from me and I really need your product because I don't want this to ever happen to me again.
Perfect. So I have a client, and actually he works at BMO, and he was telling me that his grandma moved in with him. Grandpa died. Grandma moved in with the family. And she's typically not very much shopping online or doing anything like that. But for Christmas, and I believe this was throughout the pandemic, you know, no one's really going into the malls. So, of course, Amazon was a big thing. And she got hacked through her credit card. Yeah. And he came to me and he's like, you know what? Obviously, at that time, our product was just new. He said to me, you know what? I was doing our free trial. I'm going to pay for this. I want my grandma to be using this. You know what I mean? And I said, honestly, like, this is what it's there before. I'm sorry we weren't able to help her from before. But now that you have it, it's stories like that. That's like, you know what? These are real people. Like, everyone's losing money in some way, some form. Even if it's $5, we want it to stop, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I've heard some crazy stories. My sister works at American Express. Yep. And she tells me, like, how these elderly people are targeted. Mm-hmm. And this one guy had $100,000 wiped out of his account because... Wow. He had someone, you know, elderly people don't know what's going on, right? Mm-hmm. This guy calls him, posing as his grandson. Yeah. He's like, hey, grandpa, you know, this, whatever, whatever. Mm-hmm. And he thinks this is like his grandchild, right?
Yeah.
Gives him his credit card information, mm-hmm. wipes out, goes back to American Express. He's like, hey, all these transactions, this mm-hmm. was not me. I thought this was my grandson, but they couldn't do anything about it. Mm-hmm. Does your company prevent stuff from, you know, with AI coming?
Yes.
You can pose as someone's voice. You can say, hey, I am company A, B, C, and D. Mm-hmm. We're official. Mm-hmm. And you can sound like an actual agent from a particular company.
Yes.
Do you stop things like that? Because that's emerging and people are vulnerable for things like that
exactly.
now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we wouldn't necessarily, because it's hard to get into like phone calls. So we don't necessarily stop the calls.
Yeah.
What we do is we offer an educational piece on what to do when you receive those calls. And this is where our new book, our Cyber Ollie's book of Frauds and Scams, we have this out to accompany our online product. It's to be like, look, a lot of these scams that people fall for, unfortunately, when you sit back and realize a lot of them are common sense. Some of them can be tricky, but it's really the educational piece to make you realize, like, look, don't feel pressured or rushed into doing anything for financial, sending any information. Sit back, think about it. Even if you have to hang up on the person, if it's legit and it's something that really needs to, they'll get to you in other means. But we really just want to push the educational part of it. And this is where, not necessarily Scambox Plus, but this is where our speaking engagements and our book is going to really fight and combat that.
Yeah. Amazing. Man, crazy stories out here.
Yeah, a lot. There's a lot of scams happening. Yeah. I almost got scammed out of my Instagram account. I think I told you about that.
Okay, hey, Facebook? What happened? Man. Yeah.
Somebody was posing as a friend
and
tried to get me to give them the two-factor authentication. Mm-hmm. And then I almost went for it. Actually, no, I did go for it. Mm-hmm. But I got it back after... like countless emails to Facebook. Luckily, I have a Facebook rep, so they gave me the right instructions to get back to it. So it was tricky, but there's a lot. And I'm experienced with Facebook and Instagram. So Tom's was my account. I was like, damn, if I can fall for it, anybody can fall for it.
Exactly.
Yeah, man. And that's what I was going to say. Even my sisters, one of them got scammed with a job, right? Yeah. Like, hey, apply for this job. Mm-hmm. We're going to pay you. We're going to do this. Mm-hmm. And it's so easy to fool people these days.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Everybody, you know, you think it can never happen to you mm-hmm. until it actually happens to you.
Exactly.
And I think that's where people think they are way above it. Mm-hmm. Even me, when I was hearing my sister's story, like my sister is a UFT honor roll scholar type of woman, young woman. And we're sitting in the backyard during like, you know, family hangouts around the fire.
Yep.
He's like, yeah, you know, I'm like, hey, you're wrapping that job at ABC company. Mm-hmm. He's like, bro, that thing was a scam. I'm like, are you kidding me? It's like, I was like, how did you not see that? And I was laughing because I was like, but she was hurt by me laughing because it's like, no, bro, they did it so well that you'd have thought it was legit.
Yeah.
So one of the things that scare me moving forward is that you do not know who is who.
Yeah.
As a company can pose as like legit, but they're like crooks behind castles these days. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. And it happens to the best of us, as you said. You know, you guys know Barbara Corran from Shark Tank?
Yes.
Yeah, you heard her story, right?
What happened?
One of her accountants, it was a phishing email, and she lost, was it a little over $400,000? She does real estate all over, obviously, right? And this was a company in Germany, well, posing as the company in Germany. And she almost lost over $400K because the person sent the email transfer. Mm. So again, even when I think of your sister, it's like nobody should feel bad if they fall for it. You're not looking for it. Like, you know, you go to your job, whatever you're in, media, whatever you're in. You're not, if you're not trained to see these things or don't have some sort of technology to help you, it's they're getting smarter as the days go on. So nobody should feel bad. Nobody should feel shy. Share your story so that people like me can help. You know what I mean?
100%. So what do you see next for Scamblocks?
Scamblocks, honestly, want to go to more conventions like this at Collision and, you know, things that we're doing around Canada and the United States. Really, we're just trying to scale, get the word out, and get our product to a broader base of people who really need it.
Mm. Most definitely. So, Kyle, let's talk about the business. Yep. How much revenue have you done so far?
So, right now, we have 214 paid customers on our annual plan, $49.99 a year and $4.99 a month. So we've been just scaling ever since. We're trying to, again, Collision conferences like this to build and grow, to kind of build the scale. We're a subscription-based model. And then also we have our book on Amazon and Audible that's coming out soon.
Nice. So you have about three revenue streams that's happening with
Scamblocks.
Now, with CyberAI, how's the business there? How is that business ran?
So in the next coming, I want to say mid of 2024, we're looking to introduce our new product called CyberAI Pro, which is going to be targeting specifically banks and financial institutions, targeting AML and PAM and SIEM, which, long story short, it's privileged access management for people working in these financial institutions so that they don't corrupt from within. So that's the next product that we're working on, and we're really excited about it.
Yeah, so walk us through like the growth strategy since 2019, right? Of course, you have the annual plan and you have the subscription model.
Yes.
What are some of the roadblocks you've had in terms of like acquiring new customers? And once you got over those roadblocks, how did you like really turn up the dial to scale it?
So I would say, good question. One roadblock that comes into mind in particular is comparing us to other companies like McAfee or Norton VPN. A lot of people mistake antivirus with what we're doing. We try to tell people that we're specifically frauds and scams. We're not dealing with antivirus. We'll partner with antivirus companies, but that is not our forte. And once we've got over that whole hurdle of just educating people, letting them know that, look, we're here to just defend you from frauds and scams, it's kind of been up there. It's been like educating people, letting them know what we're doing. And it's been a more of an interest that way, because we find more people have been facing frauds and scams than they do viruses in their everyday life. So this is what we're targeting.
And your target demographic, how would you describe that?
I mean, it's an open product. It's open. But I would say we initially started targeting people on social media. So I guess the youth would be like on Instagram, and seniors. Seniors, again, need the educational piece. And then our generation would need more so online. So between seniors and, I would say, demographic, maybe 18 to 35.
Yeah, man. I was saying, like, with the older demographic, like that education piece is like, could be like an uphill thing to climb, right? So what's like the education process like, and bringing them in and be like, okay, this is scamming, this can happen to you, buy a product?
For that, we've been using resources around us to kind of help build this awareness that seniors are already involved with. So for example, we've partnered with the Toronto Public Library and we've done some speaking engagements. We're also part of a incubator, Seneca Helix, out of Seneca College, where we bring entrepreneurs and seniors there to kind of have talks. And then we're looking to target the Toronto District School Board as well to get the youth in there. So really, it's about going where the seniors are, going where these people are, where they're comfortable, they're open to ask us questions, and then we bring that educational piece to them.
Amazing.
Awesome, man. So with that being said, I think it's a good note to wrap up on. What, moving forward, for any entrepreneur, what advice do you have for them?
I would say find a strong team. You know, there's really no island, no man's an island. I really believe that. Find people who are passionate about what you're doing and link up with them and have solid co-founders. And there's nothing but up from that.
Most definitely. With that being said, the hustle is what you can control. So control your life. I control your grind. I'm Alex.
And I'm Oino Sinde.
Kyle Rose, Scamblocks Plus.
All right, on to the next one.
Hey guys, thank you so much for watching the show. We have some amazing merch live on our website right now. My personal favorite is the Definition Tee. You can go find it in the link below. And if you don't like that, you can explore some other products on our website.
So, hustle over everything here at Collision. We're here with Spencer Bontho.
Yeah, that's right.
And he's with Drop Commerce. Spencer, what is Drop Commerce?
Yeah, so Drop Commerce is a drop shipping platform live on Shopify, Wix, BigCommerce, and ShopLaza. And what we do is we connect merchants that have Shopify stores with suppliers for a dropshipping relationship. So basically, if you have a Shopify store, you can download Drop Commerce. browser of our products and import them directly into your own store. And then you can begin selling and marketing those products to your customers. And as you make a sale, the supplier will ship it directly to your customer. You keep the margins and pay them. And you pay DropCommerce a monthly subscription fee to handle the product discovery and the order processing. All of our products are higher quality, fast shipping.
Which categories do you cover?
Everything. We have everything from handmade candles to solar panels and everything in between. So the main basis is just they have to be fulfilled from the United States or Canada. But we cover all the different niches, so we can tailor to any specific business.
Amazing. And how long have you been in business?
We launched on Shopify October of 2018. So this is the fifth year of operating. And we've slowly just grown into a few different platforms along the way.
Amazing. And how many stores are connected to DropCommerce right now?
On Shopify, we have over 13,000 stores and another 5,000 across the other platforms.
Amazing, man. And what are your future plans for DropCommerce?
Yeah, we have lots of different ideas. I mean, it's 2023, so it wouldn't be this year without talking about AI. So we have some plans to incorporate AI to help our merchants along the way, and lots of other ideas along those lines, as well as we're going to be expanding into white labeling our products as well, print on demand, just to offer more flexibility to our merchants.
Amazing. Well, we have a large entrepreneurship audience, a lot of Shopify creatives. DropCommerce, go check them out. Link will be in the description. Spencer, thank you so much for the short time we spent together, man. And I wish you all the best in your future success.
Yeah, thank you very much. Great time with you.
We have a special guest in the building. We have Justina. How you doing?
I am doing good. A little nervous. This is my first time, but I'm doing great.
Most definitely. How you doing, bro?
I'm blessed, man. Yeah. Back in Collision again.
Yes, you're back in Collision.
Back in the booth again, baby. You know what I'm saying? Justina, we were here, the background was black. Nice. So I like the fact that we have a red background. It actually illuminates us. We actually stand out.
You can pop out of the background. That's a fact.
Last time we had the black shirts and with the black background.
Yeah.
It was just messy.
Looking like the Dr. Dre album. You know?
And red is our color. Red, yellow, anything black goes well on any color, really. So this is amazing.
Most definitely. Yeah. So you work at BFN and you also are a founder yourself. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yes. So I am a program coordinator at the Black Founders Network, where we essentially help Black entrepreneurs in the Canadian ecosystem find the right mix of funding, capital, resources, capacity building, and community to scale at the different stages of their journey. So either from ideation to growth to scaling. And we're also sector agnostic. And in addition to that, I'm also the founder of Oquera, which does quite a few things. There's Oquera Recruitment. We're helping companies grow by connecting them to talent. There's Oquera Academy, which is still an initiative in progress, where we're essentially helping anyone from the BIPOC community get the talents, skills that they need to work in entrepreneurship, in tech, and in skill trades. And there's something called Oquera House, which again, still be in the works. We're trying to help immigrants moving to Canada and different diasporas have a house to call home away from home. So they can literally find shelter here, they can find food, but they can also find resources to settle into those new spaces. So quite a few things. I'm an immigrant myself. I moved to Canada around 6 years ago now from Zambia. Wow. Both my parents are Congolese and they were immigrants from the DRC, Democratic Republic of Congo, to Zambia, where me and my four sisters were born and raised. And I moved to Canada initially to go to the University of Toronto. I got a MasterCard, a fully funded MasterCard scholarship from the MasterCard Foundation. So they paid for anything and everything. It really helped me settle in Toronto. And at U of T, I studied African studies, focusing on entrepreneurship for women on the African continent and also women and gender studies. But that is me in a nutshell.
Wow.
Amazing. Yeah. So, Justina, I'm curious. Mm-hmm. What was that first moment you had when you realized I want to be part of the entrepreneurship community and also wanting to be an entrepreneur?
Yes, absolutely. Entrepreneurship has always been part of my story. So like I said, my parents were immigrants from Congo to Zambia. Mm-hmm. And coming from in a time when there was terrible relationships, immigration relationships between the DRC and Zambia. And so they needed to find jobs. Mm-hmm. They created their own jobs. My dad is a mechanic. And for as long as I have known him, he's been an entrepreneur and self-employed. So I was really exposed to that industry. But also Zambia is a country that has a very young population, mm-hmm. but also like like many African countries, high levels of unemployment, and the youth have to create jobs of their own. And so I had to do that as well. I managed to get a job after high school, but I also needed funds. Even when applying for scholarships, for example, it's not cheap. Like, you need to print out stuff, you need to send stuff via DHL to the US. Like, you need money for that. So my first exposure to my own entrepreneurship was reselling dashiki shirts. Yeah. You know, the dashiki prints, right? So I would go to a place called Comesa in Lusaka, Zambia's capital, order those for like 25 kwacha, and then resell them for 50 kwacha. And then I moved to Canada, went to U of T, and I was doing an independent research on how African women are actually using entrepreneurship as a way to overcome neoliberalism, but also as a way to overcome a lot of challenges they're going through, from domestic abuse, financial abuse, etc. A whole bunch of African women are entrepreneurs. When you walk down the streets in Zambia, for example, they're selling tomatoes to feed their families, right?
Yeah, even in Nairobi too, in Kenya too. Yeah, right. We see that a lot.
Yeah, right. We call them tuntembas in Zambia. Yeah. So they are really in that space, but they don't have enough support, they don't have enough resources and recognition. So my research was really drilling in on what resources are available to them and how do we celebrate them, the ones that are recognized already, how do we give them even more recognition, the ones that are not, how do we give them that recognition to begin with. And so when I was close to graduation in 2021, I started Okwera Recruitment, which initially started as just a consulting service to help folks from the African continent looking for scholarships like myself find the right resources and also just know how to write even a CV or a scholarship essay and etc. And so that happened, and it then morphed into a recruitment firm because I was part of BPTN, actually, Black Professionals in Tech Network. At the time, they had a Slack. They were channel? Using Slack. Slack, yeah, before they moved to OpsCD, they had a Slack channel. And there's someone on there who was recruiting for an engineer. And they say, can someone help me find a Black engineer? If you help me, I'll give you like 10 or 20% of this person's first year salary, which was like, that's a huge incentive. You know how much engineers make, like, right?
200K.
Yeah, right. So that's like 20K, 10K, so somewhere was, between there. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. So that was a huge incentive. So I didn't know anything about recruitment, but I was also a broke student at the time. So I was like, I'm going to go out of my way to find this person for you. So that process, me trying to find the right person, me going on LinkedIn and cold calling people, that is talent sourcing, which is recruitment, the base level of recruitment, right? Finding the right talent. I found that I enjoyed it because I have an eye for seeing potential and talent in people. So I filled that role. I got paid and it was good money. And I was like, you know what? If this person needs this service, a lot of other people need this service. So yeah. I built a business out of that. And Okwera Recruitment for the past 2 years has served quite a few startups in the US, especially. We have helped some startups in Nigeria. We have helped folks from Zambia, engineers from Zambia, for example, find connections with these startups in the US that are hiring remotely. And yeah, and in that process is when I noticed that, because with a remote culture, a lot of companies are hiring from anywhere and everywhere. And so if you're giving 100K salary to a software engineer, and I know someone from my neighborhood in Zambia has the skills, I'm going to prioritize them because that goes a long way in Zambia than it does in the US. But in that process, I noticed the talent gap in our continent, but sometimes not even the talent gap, the fact that people are so talented, but they don't know how to communicate their talent, right? And so that's what Okwera Academy is built on. It's teaching people how to get the skills and communicate the skills, communicate the value, employment readiness. I'm already working with employers, so I know what employers are looking for in terms of resumes, interviews, etc. And so career coaching in that sense to ensure folks from our communities are being placed in the right companies and getting the money, essentially. Yeah.
I want to ask you about the first time you're recruiting for that engineering role. You're coming in, you're trying to staff someone's role.
Yes.
How did you know what to ask in these cold calls, what to look for, what skills to go after, and also make sure that when you're sending these candidates over, they're actually top tier candidates that can possibly get this a role? So what was your screening process like as you're going through that? So you can actually become like competent and actually knowing what to look for.
Absolutely. And as you can imagine, it's been a lot of growth from 2 years ago versus now. Yeah. But the process is streamlined, right? It starts with having a needs assessment with the person, the employer, essentially, sitting down with them and understanding just beyond the specific role that they're hiring for, because I'm not
a very technical person. If I'm hiring for engineers, I don't know exactly what to screen for in terms of the technical parts of it. But I do know if you're looking for someone with, say, Java, Python, whatever it is, and that is communicated in resumes, I can screen for that. And there's ATS, applicant tracking systems, that screens for specific words in resumes. So that would be one process. But beyond that also is just sitting down with these companies and understanding their organizational values and cultures, because the culture fit is a big part of it. So you want to make sure all of that is communicated in your job description. So even before you send me a job description to just copy and paste and put there, I want to make sure the job description actually matches the person you're looking for. If you're looking for a senior person, I want to make sure the wording is correct. If you're a company that claims to be diverse and to be, you know, prioritizing BIPOC and women in the tech space, I want to make sure the words in your job description are not coded for those biases, right? So once we go through that process, and then we post on our job boards, we're using Indeed, we're using LinkedIn, but also understanding where your potential candidate lives. If it's maybe C-level VP person, maybe they are on LinkedIn a lot, but if you're looking at tech talent like engineers, they're hanging out on the GitHubs, right? On the in the Slack groups. So then you invade those spaces and you start cold calling and saying, hey, there's this person that's hiring for ABCD. Here's the value proposition. Here's the value add for you. You make that connection. You do the initial phone screens. You make sure there's that match. And then you present them to the clients, the employers, who then do the more skill assessment-based stuff and then hire from then on. Yeah.
So what is the business model? How do you guys make money?
Yes. So there is two main ways to make money. So the services that we're providing are direct hire, so which is full-time employment, contract to hire, which is exactly what it sounds like. First start on a contract and then full-time employment. And then there's the freelance model. And this is a very recent addition for us. And what we found is that, especially working more so on the BFN side with very early stage startups that do not have the capital to hire full-time folks, and they're more focused on product and operations at this point. They just want to build out the product and then go to market. We want to make sure that they have someone to help them out with the technical aspects of whatever they are building for the first few months or so. So those are the services that we're offering. And then in terms of the business model itself, there's retainer. So we are retained by these companies to be their go-to when they're hiring. And then there's contingency, which stipulates a larger percentage. Like the initial, gig that I got, it's like if you hire someone, you get 20 to 25%. That's usually the rate of whatever their first year salary is, full salary. So that's base plus any benefits on top of that.
Amazing, amazing. And what is the biggest win that you've gotten so far in 1 minute?
Yes, it was not a financial win, but it's getting the opportunity to pitch to Mercer and JP Morgan our services. We didn't get the gig, but that in itself was a big win for me. But also,
it was validating for you.
It was validating. It's like someone sees your work, but also getting into the BFN community and getting the role to help other Black founders, because I have the lived experience of a founder and I've seen those challenges. That would be the biggest one as well.
As Brooke was wrapping up, what tips do you have for other Black female entrepreneurs?
Oh.
In 1 minute.
Yes, I know I'm running over time. One is imposter syndrome. You're gonna feel it. Be afraid. Do it anyway. Two is find mentorship, find community, and find people who understand your journey. I think there's two ways to look at it. I use the analogy of the Google Maps. You can either go to Google and place in your destination and have Google show you where to go, which in this case is like all the reading and the theory that we do, or you can have someone who's been to your destination hold your hand and say, okay, I'm gonna walk with you. So mentorship, community support has been a big help for me. Yeah.
Amazing. Amazing. With that being said,
the hustle is what you can't control.
So control your grind.
And control your life, baby.
I'm Alex.
And I'm Bueno Sinde.
And I'm Justina Kanza.
Amazing. Wow. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me, you guys.
Yes, sir. This podcast is brought to you by Nyorai Cellars. If you didn't know, Nyorai Cellars is the only Black-owned wine company in Canada. Right now, I'm holding the rosé. The 2021 rosé bottle. This drink is amazing. I mean, it's perfect for those dishes such as seafood where you're cooking shrimp, you're having some pasta, whatever it is you're having, grab a bottle of Nyorai Cellars, the rosé,
If you're having a date night with your significant other, you know what to grab? Grab the Nurai. Whatever it is, grab the Nurai. I mean, you will not go wrong with this wine. It's perfect for everybody. If you've never drank wine, this is a great bottle for you. Or even if you're a wine expert, you're an aficionado and you drink everything. I mean, you cannot go in your rye. I'm telling you, this wine is really, really good. And even though I'm boosting it this hard, is because I really love drinking it and I'm someone who loves to drink wine. So whatever it is, whatever the special occasion, check on your rye. They have Sauvignon Blancs, they have Rieslings. I'm holding the Rosé right now. They have a wide variety of different collections of different wines you can choose from. Make sure to check them out. The link is going to be in the description. Check them out. Order a crate for yourself, or you can send a gift to someone that you want to gift some wine to. You can't go wrong with that. So in your Rye Cellars, check them out. Link will be in the description. And I'm back to the show.
So, let me ask you something. What's the biggest challenge you've had to overcome when it comes to running your business?
Honestly, it's been the explaining, right? Because sometimes as artists and we're coming into corporate spaces, they don't think that it's made for us, right? Mm. And then being black as well, it's like, okay, what are we really even doing in this space? What is the? How comes it's for you? And we kind of have to explain why it's for us and why we need to be in this space to help all the other people in this space. Like we were just talking to somebody a while ago and they're like, yo, how are we supposed to get? I was talking to somebody a while ago. They're like, how am I supposed to get the money that I see other people getting? Right? And we're like, well, you have to know how to pitch yourself, how to know how to network yourself, to get yourself into proper spaces. And to do that really does take these artistic principles that we like to teach about.
So real quick, I don't know if you said it. What is Roundtable? Talk to us about it.
So Malachi, I'm the CEO and one of the founders of Roundtable. This is my partner, Priority. So Roundtable, we're a record label for artists, by artists. So we have three movements. We have the entrepreneurship movement, where we teach artists how to create monetizable services that they can sell to non-for-profits, corporations, and schools. Like you were saying, for example, we teach like people that have startups how to pitch their business with our artistic principles. And it's like a new way to create income outside of performing. We also have like the artist reform movement, where we teach people that make music how to become an artist. That's ultimately a role model in the community, and then a professional that can work with these corporations. And then finally, the STEM to STEAM movement, where we're trying to put arts into STEM and make it hot. We got that STEAM, so that's a little bit about Roundtable. And we make music too, so we have RTG. So we have some Afro-Caribbean dancehall music coming out soon. Solely, I'm the Hood Prophet, so Hood Prophet Kings, that's my artist name. I have some hip-hop coming out, so we got South.
That's some ring to it.
Yeah, Hood Prophet Kings. It's a Priority. Run that.
Priority.
Let's hear it.
All right.
Priority. Hello, Michael Jackson and that. I was going to say, you know, for artists, by that's like FABA, you know, FUBU is like... For us, by us. So that's like a nice little acronym for artists by artists. You guys should coin that. Yeah, FABA, you know what I'm saying?
We'll make sure in the discography we'll be like Owen.
Yes, I am. Owen 24/7 Hustler, put us on.
Yeah, all right, so last tip for entrepreneurs on the rise, what tip do you have for them that you've learned over your time?
Keep going. Don't let anybody tell you that what you're doing isn't something important, especially if it stems from a problem that impacts you and your community. Don't let somebody tell you that that's not important, because there's going to be people saying, oh, I don't know if that's something fundable. What does that even mean? How do you dictate what is fundable and what's not fundable? They can't, especially people that haven't been in your community. You know why you're doing it, and you know the type of power and the type of impact that it's going to have when you make that successful. So keep going. Don't let anybody stop you from doing that.
Yeah. Persistence, baby. That's what it is.
And for myself, I just want to tell the people to do something you love. Like, find your purpose and walk in your purpose. Like, everybody has their own unique purpose, and the Lord will bless you. He'll guide you. Even if you're confused, you don't know how, He'll put the right pieces around you. Like, for us, we stepped in our purpose by coming here. We run into somebody that we know that gives us the opportunity to talk about Roundtable and promote our brand. And ultimately, we get to do the same thing by speaking in front of you guys, and you guys are promoting your brand. It's like our purpose is just intertwined because of something that we love doing, which is supporting being in this environment. So find your purpose and just follow it.
Amazing, Malachi.
Wow.
I like how you have the Versace on the glasses. You gotta let them know. You gotta let them know, baby. Okay.
The Dark Martens on the kicks. We don't know where we got this one, but it's fly. We got the top, you know what I mean? So it just sounds so subtle.
Oh, I love it, man. I love it. You gotta let them know at Collision, right?
I got the sauce. They calling me Sasuke.
Sasuke.
You have a dope interview, man.
You got something lined up.
Ayo, we're dealing.
Back in the podcast.
Most definitely. Ayo is one of our biggest podcasts. You know, when you had him on talking about getting a job in tech.
It did numbers.
You know, so of course we had to get him back in now that we got Collision. Yes, sir. You know, and we have another guest as well. Yes, you know, sir. I hear nothing but good things. Listen, we got the call sign from Isaac. What's going on,
Alfred,
bro?
Thanks for having me. We got two Al's on the podcast.
Two Al's. Yeah,
two Al's.
You know what I'm saying?
Actually, so, Alfred comes from Alexander and Frederick. And
really?
Then, yeah, my dad. Yeah.
Get out of here. Yeah.
So Alexander is kind of in my, it's in my blood.
Hey, shout out to the Alex. You know what I'm saying? All right, so we have two different things we're going to talk about today. So let's start off with you and what you're doing, and we get to you. You know what I'm saying?
Cool.
So since we last chat, you know, you've been working in tech. What has been, you know, on the horizon for you? You know, you've been working on Techsgiving. Talk to us.
Yeah, man, I've been doing a lot, but everything is all under the same umbrella of helping more Black underrepresented people get jobs in tech, right? Today at Collision, or this week at Collision, we actually hosted a masterclass focusing on thinking big and thinking Africa, right? And that's through Tech Connect Africa, right? And Tech Connect Africa is a social enterprise that focuses on reversing the brain drain from Africans that are across the diaspora. So Canada, USA, UK, Ireland, so on and so forth, coming back to the continent and pouring in. Why? Because Africa is the fastest growing continent in the world. Nigeria specifically is on track to be the number 3 most populated country in the world as well, too. There's so much talent and so many opportunities that are coming back to Africa, and it's important for us diasporans to actually be the ones that are driving it, not the others. The others are trying to put their fingerprints all over it, and we're trying to reverse the narrative so it could truly be for us, by us.
Yeah, and actually I've been noticing that too, especially like in countries like Nigeria,
yeah,
Kenya. They have a lot of advanced technology that it never really gets highlighted.
Mm-hmm.
Even you see Jack Dorsey, Mark Zuckerberg, all these big
They're going back.
Yeah. There's things that happening out there. I'm sorry to cut you off, but that's what we call signal.
Mm-hmm.
There's things like noise where it's like, don't pay too much attention to it. Their signal when you got people like Bill Gates going, who just was in Nigeria last week, and Jack Dorsey, super big on, he's doing something with crypto out there as well, too. Their signal with all these people that are going out there. Who's the founder of the Ethereum, who was out there maybe 6 months ago as well, too?
Yeah, what's his name?
Don't let me butcher his name. But nonetheless, you're seeing all these big guys that are going out there, right? And it's great that they're doing that, but we should be also having our hands on the steering wheel as well, too.
Definitely, you know? It's like you're saying, the population is growing immensely at one of the fastest rates in the world. And they're like the biggest population behind the U.S. And the amount of opportunity from infrastructure to technology, it's like you're saying, it's growing rapidly, you know? So walk us through the average day in your life right now. What's going on?
Craziness. There is no average day. Recently I've just been traveling. I was in LA for AfriCon. Mm. So shout out to Amplify Africa. We were out there. We had a speaking engagement, and it was just phenomenal speakers out there. Then after that, came up to Atlanta for Render ATL. Not sure if you guys have heard of that. I had a speaking engagement out there. Mm-hmm. Went phenomenal. Went and rested in D.C., which is where I'm from. Just chilled out, and now I'm back up here in Toronto. But really, the day-to-day is really, you know, balancing the 9-to-5 of Google with all the passion and focus projects that I have going on as well, too. So that's a short answer and not the best answer, but it's usually just trying to balance a crazy life is the day-to-day.
And are you trying to leave, like, a 9-to-5 to pursue these things?
Yeah.
Like, how close are you to doing that?
I think that's a very good question. One, the first answer is yes. I am definitely trying to leave that. But I think the closeness is based on the market for me, right? A lot of the ways that these opportunities are funded for me are based on the economy and how much funding they have to give to a funded project like this as well, too. So it's changing every day. I would say it's definitely within that 1 to 2 year window for sure, where we take that jump off the leap of faith as well, too.
Yeah, man. I think you've been at this for such a long time that I think when that time comes, you know, like, it's going to be a smooth transition. It's not going to feel like, oh, I'm leaving my job to pursue this. It's just like, this is like my full-time job now.
Yeah, it's just the next step.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Definitely. So to wrap up on your side, before you get to yours, you know, you have a tenure at multiple different companies, right?
Yeah.
So if you can just leave a quick tip for the people that are wanting to be entrepreneurs but want to get in a job in tech that's high paying so they can finesse that into a job, sorry, into a business, what tips do you have for them?
Well, one, find something that you're, who's the guy we just talked to who just founded that company? You were just talking to it backstage as well, too.
DeVars?
Yes. He had a great quote, and he talked about a lot of people try to focus solely on passion, and that's a great thing to do, but you also have to focus on profits. He was like, and I took from that was like, focus on things that you can lean into that are going to be easy barriers to entry to kind of get you in. And then after that, focus on ways that you can upskill so that way you can get to the profits as well, too. So one, if you're trying to get into tech, think about your skills that you already have now and how you can translate that into the tech space. So now if you're going from the, I guess, 9 to 5 to more so the 5 to 9 space, think about ways that you can leverage the skills that you're doing on the 9 to 5 for your 5 to 9, right? Don't try to separate the two. One thing that I always try to do is make sure that everything I do from a day-to-day is applicable to Tech Connect Africa or Techsgiving or anything of that nature, because at the end of the day, I don't have that much, none of us have that much brain capacity to do things, right? You don't want to be a jack of all trades. You want to be a master of something, right? So I'm mastering helping other people break into the tech industry is what I'm focusing on as well, too. So one, find that skill that you already have a transferable skill with, lean into that heavy. And then two, figure out how you can leverage that skill to have a side business and then start to grow that as well, too. Start to leverage that as well.
Most definitely. Amazing. So now, for the people that don't know you,
yeah,
would you mind introducing yourself to the audience?
Yes, sir. So I'm Alfred Bergeson. I live in Halifax, Nova Scotia. I'm the founder and CEO of Tribe Network. And Tribe Network is an accelerator and incubator for racialized entrepreneurs, right? So for racialized founders that are starting their businesses, they need access to coaches, they need access to mentors, they need access to training, they need access to capital. There's a lot of things we need access to that historically we haven't had a lot of access to, right? And I experienced this firsthand when I walked into an innovation hub in Halifax. This is publicly funded innovation hub, and we have these across country. Mm-hmm. All right. Every province has them. And when we pay taxes, we're funding these spaces where entrepreneurs can walk in for free and get access to supports. I walked into one in Halifax and didn't see anyone that looked like us in there. I said, what's going on
and
here?
And for context, like Nova Scotia, Halifax is a big black community, right?
It is. It's one of the largest and the most historical black community in Canada. Yep. You know what I mean? And so
it's founding, like one of the founding black communities 100%. In Canada. Yeah.
A lot of black legacy there. And so I walk into this build and I'm like, yo, like, where are the people of color? Like, I'm the only one in here. And I look at the team, no black people, no person of color. Mm-hmm. And so really, I just felt like something's got to change. You know what I mean? I didn't feel like I belonged in the space. Didn't feel like they understood who I was, what I was trying to do. A lot of them didn't even care to, you know what I mean? Because they never been around us. And so that kind of inspired me to say, okay, what can I do? I've got access to a network. I'm building my own thing. But how can I create something that will allow more of us to get access to the same resources that these people are getting? So we created Tribe, and that's what we're doing.
So you raised money for this, right? How much money have you raised today?
So we've got about $4 million, some from the government, some from private sector. And Tribe Network, essentially, like I mentioned, like we have entrepreneurs that join our programs, mash them up with a mentor, mash them up with a coach, create a plan for them to go from an idea or an MVP to like getting them funding and getting them hiring people and getting them actually creating value. So we've been doing this for about 2 years now, and we've had success in having entrepreneurs go from idea to raising a seed round or a pre-seed round. And so now the thing that we're doing next to complement that is actually raising our own VC, right? So right now we're able to give people access to grant funding and little non-dilutive funding, but again, we're seeing success in entrepreneurs leaving our program to go get millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. And so now we're creating our own fund to complement the programs that we do.
Mm-hmm. That's huge.
Which companies have you invested in so far?
So we've helped people like Wovio. I don't know if you guys have heard of Wovio.
Wovio?
Fintech product. Started in PEI. Founder had a prototype that they were building. And we supported them, made an introduction to black VC firm out of Toronto. Mm-hmm. Next thing you know, the black firm is leading their round. They raise 1.5, they go to Calgary, and now they're taking off, right? So we've been helping people at the very early stage in terms of getting really clear on what problem are you solving, what value are you actually bringing, and then connecting them with capital and coaches that can actually help them execute.
Amazing. So Alfred, you know, we're here in Collision. You got the investor tag on.
Yeah.
Do you feel like a lot of people come to you and they're like, hey, listen to my idea? You know, when people see an investor tag, they get into pitch mode.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So what are some crazy pitches you've heard so far when you've been at the event?
Honestly, I haven't heard a lot of, like, nothing too crazy. I've honestly been impressed. I've been impressed by some of the companies that are here.
Yeah.
And I mean, we're getting access to some rooms, and so, you know, we're around founders that are saying we've raised 100 million.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so Collision is really an incredible place to find some talent. And for me, we're raising our fund right now, right? So I'm getting a chance to really better understand, you know, the ones that are being able to raise 100 mil, like what kind of energy they're bringing to those pitches and what kind of problems that they're solving. It's making me realize, okay, this is the kind of,
it's,
you know,
the caliber of talent.
Yeah. Sure, yeah. Exactly.
Can I stop?
Let's talk.
I was just going to mention that. Like, I think, shout out to Collision, because I think there's this like a motivation of like, you're at a conference where people are playing at a certain level, whether in VC, whether as a startup founder, whether as a tech professional, everybody's at a certain level as well too. So yeah. Especially as us, as the people don't look like most of the people here, this motivation, like, okay, when you see something in front of you, it's like, okay, I can go get that too as well.
Yeah,
too.
Crazy story. So I was checking in this morning, and I wanted the girl to put this wristband on my right hand. She's like, oh, no worries. Like, I know you want to, I know your watch is there, but trust me, I've seen like 20 Rolexes today. Like, and they all don't mind having the wristband on the left side. I'm like, crazy. Yeah. Like, they're paying $14,000 tickets just to be here. There's some like high rollers in here, big VCs. Sure. So that just really let me know like the caliber of investors and people paying these VIP $14,000 tickets just to be in here,
just to go to that, there's just a back room,
the back room, just to be part of that secretive back room of like exchanging networks and exchanging information. It's crazy.
Yeah. And I want to be clear, I'm not paying 14K to get in there, but it is worth 14K.
It's worth
absolutely.
It, definitely.
Just based on who's in there and, you know, the types players, of people you can rub shoulders with, is definitely worth 14K.
Yeah.
So now you mentioned something about having a difference or seeing a difference between the 100 million entrepreneur and the $1 million entrepreneur. What is that difference that you usually see?
Really, it's thinking big. You know what I mean? We had a panel the other day, Think Big, Think Africa. It's just thinking big. You know what I mean? A lot of founders, and I would say founders that we've been working with and helping develop, like, they're thinking small and thinking in their local market and not realizing that the world can be their market. You know what I mean? Like, they have the opportunity to solve problems, not just in their local community or in Canada, but these problems are transferable to other markets across the world. So I think those founders that are raising 100 mil and doing all that, like, they're looking at the world as the entire world as their market. You know what I mean? And so that's one piece of advice I give to founders is, like, don't limit what you think you can do and try to solve a problem. Like, be genuine about solving a problem, but think about the number of people that you can impact by what you're doing.
Gotcha. Now, I'm a marketer by trade.
Okay.
So there's been a tide shift in terms of growth. Yeah. You know, before there used to be the true classic teas that would grow on Facebook, you know, and brands that would grow on TikTok. With you investing in net new companies now, what are the methods of growth that you're seeing that's like, oh, he's doing that, I know he's going to grow, I want to invest in something like that?
Yeah. So, I mean, we are, we're still raising our fund, right? Okay. So we're not deploying capital yet.
Not yet, yeah.
The expectation is to be deploying capital at the end of this year.
Okay.
In terms of the founders that we are working with at the earlier stage, a lot of it comes down to, like, influencer marketing. You know what I mean? And just, like, who is using the tool that you've built? And I think a lot of the times people get excited when they hear a big name. People get excited when they realize that, like, you know, this is something that IO's using. You know what I mean? And so I don't think that's something that's going away anytime soon, to be honest. And so I would say, for the most part, and this is a similar strategy in raising our fund right now. You know what I mean? Like, when we walk into a room to pitch to a fund that's already raised 100 mil and we're saying, give us 2 mil, they're going to look at us and say, like, well, why would I invest in you? Sure, you might be talented and you might have deal flow, like, who else is doing this and why would I bet on you, right? Mm-hmm. So we have to have a really clear story on, like, yo, we got an NBA player in here. You know what I mean? And that will get them excited to at least pay more attention to whatever we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And social proof.
Social proof, for sure.
Yeah.
And this is for the both of you, Ayo, Alfred. What's your opinion on AI so far? Because every entrepreneur these days is AI this, AI for that. AI, AI, AI. I'm like, yo, this ain't Allen Iverson, bro. Like, what are your takes on AI and startups and everything? Like, you know, just to get your take first, Ayo.
So, a lot of takes, but I'm gonna keep it concise. So, AI has seen the fastest adoption of any technology in the history of mankind. Mm-hmm. I think it's over 100 million users in 2 months. Mm-hmm. So, wow. When you think about the internet, you think about Web3, and you think about, this is dating back to horse and carriage, I'm gassing it, but not really. That shows signal. I'm big on like, okay, there's a signal, because the reason why AI is adopting so fast is because people can instantly see and use the use cases that it gives people in terms of being more efficient and things of that nature. So me personally, I definitely see there's a lot of signal in terms of like the use cases for it and making things simpler and just making overall life easier and making things more equitable. However, when you introduce something where only certain players are the driving forces of it, because none of us are the big players of AI, at least as it stands right now, that introduces a certain set of bias. Mm. And that is something that needs to be very, 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 like, watched very deeply, because these things can go left very quickly if you let us not be the drivers of it as well, too. Mm. So cybersecurity, risk management, things like that are going to be the second wave of AI that people should start to look at to make sure that it's more equitable, to make sure that there's no bias, to make sure that things are just legitimate as well, too. So, yes, I am bullish on AI. Many of these companies that are here today are probably not going to be here within the next 6 to 12 months, just the name of the game. But I do think there's going to be a second wave of AI that's going to get it better than this first wave. And I think I was talking to an investor in that secret room back there. He was like, yeah, it's cool to see all these people who are playing the AI race right now, but it's really like, you know, it's a horse race, right? Whereas the horse that is at the front usually burns out towards the end, but it's the horse that's just staying steady that nobody really notices that really bursts onto the scene at the end and really wins the war. So right now it's just a race. So I think we're going to see somebody get it right. Maybe it's NVIDIA's, maybe it's another startup or something like that that's going to win the war as well, too.
Yeah, man. There's like these different things that come in waves, too, right? 3-4 years back, it was like fintech, right? There's an emergence of many fintech startups. Yeah. There's like all these martech, there's all like prop tech. It feels like there's a season for everything, which makes me think, I'm like, okay, AI, like, is this like a season for AI? Or then it's going to become a normal thing.
I think
it's
a pivot.
It's a pivot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think AI is, like, I don't think it's hype. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think it's hype at all. Like, I think this is legit. And my take on AI is that, I mean, you hear all the time about, like, people talking about jobs are going to change and, like, people are going to lose jobs and shit like that. Like, I think we need to start thinking about UBI now. You know what I mean? Like, the amount of, like, acceleration that AI has created in people's productivity in the last 6 months alone, like, in the next 6 months, you will be able to substitute employees for AI agents. You know what I mean? And so I do think that everyone is going to have the ability to create at a level that we haven't even thought of yet. And really, like, that's one thing I worry about is, like, are we prepared for the number of people that are going to be jobless? And are we creating alternatives to what life is going to look like when AI is actually taking over people's jobs?
Can I add to that? Is he's right, and I think that's, if we know this now, and I say, when I say we, nobody can, but that's what I'm talking about. We need to be proactive in learning and getting skills in AI before you become jobless, because we're going to be the ones who are going to be. We're already marginalized in the technological space, right? So it's important that we have some cognizance that, yo, jobs will be lost, industries will be shifted. What are you going to do to take advantage of this? Because so if you're an early adopter of this, you can be a change maker instead of somebody who's impacted by the impacted by the change as well, too, you know?
You know, there's a movie with Taraji P. Henson where she was working on rockets.
Mm. Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Hidden Figures.
Hidden Figures.
Yeah,
Figures.
Yeah.
Hidden
that.
Figures.
Yeah.
And in Hidden Figures, there was this, like, pivotal moment where the calculator drops. You remember that scene?
Mm-hmm.
And the calculator drops, and everyone's in there is a calculator. Her whole team was a calculator. because they would do the numbers and walk the whole thing, but the calculator drops and their whole team is about to get eliminated because they can replace them with the calculator.
Yeah, yeah.
So Taraji is like, oh, that's the new thing. Mm. We got to learn how to operate that so we can keep our jobs.
Mm.
We're in that stage right now with AI. You know, and we got to figure out how to operate it mm-hmm. so we can keep our jobs and yeah. grow.
Yeah. And even with us, man, like with editing the show, like we're yeah. using AI to edit the ums, better, the good. Filler words, even the clips we make, mm-hmm. like how to like splice them up. It's just like put the video in there. It's going to splice it up, add the captions. And before, I remember just 2 years ago, I was adding captions manually.
Bro, hours.
Hours. just to make one clip. And now yeah. you can pop out like 6-7 clips in 2 hours. It's crazy how things are changing. You know, it's yeah. it's scary at the same time, but it's also inspiring of like, you got to like elevate yourself to the next level, because if you don't stay ahead of the game, especially in the media, if we're not looking ways to innovate, we're going to get left behind. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And there's going to be AI podcasts of like someone like, you know, like Drake singing. There's like that Drake song.
Yeah, it's going to be AI podcast.
Like, that's a fact. Have a debate show about the Lakers and yeah. like take Skip and whoever, Shannon's
Stephen A.
voice,
Smith,
Stephen
yeah.
A. Smith, and
yeah,
have a debate yeah. on a podcast.
Yeah.
That's what's coming up.
Most definitely. So his work's always wrapping up, you know. What's next for you guys?
What's next for me is this summer we're going across the country and raising our fund. So that's what we're doing here.
Across Canada or America?
Across Canada.
Okay.
So right now we host an event in Halifax. We're here in Toronto. In 2 weeks we're going to be in Montreal doing the same thing, you know, on the circuit of Startup Fest, meeting with investors, meeting with founders. And then we're going to Calgary. And we're going to do the same thing in Calgary. And then later this year we'll be in Africa with Ayo and the Tech Connect crew.
Yeah, really? Yeah, we're going everywhere, man.
Everywhere.
We're going. So December 7th, we will be in South Africa. And speaking of that, Kendrick Lamar just announced that he'll be in South Africa during that same time as well, too. So, wow. You know, we're going to be there for December 7th. Then December 14th, we'll be in Nairobi, Kenya as well, too. Then after that, December 22nd, we'll be in Lagos, Nigeria. Then December 27th, we'll be in Accra, Ghana as well, too. So this is, again, that Tech Connect Africa movement where, yes, you as the diaspora in Canada, U.S., U.K., wherever you're at, come home. Come make an impact on the continent. Come connect with fellow Africans who actually live on the continent as well, too. So bringing everybody back through summits and conferences as well there, too. And we're also going to have a good time. It's not just we're not just sitting there. We're going to celebrate our culture. We're going to eat the food. We're going to, you know, we're going to dance. We're going to enjoy. And we're also going to build together as well, too. So the African way, you know.
I might be in Kenya around that time, too, because I got to go visit my grandma.
Man, let's do it.
So I might link you.
Let's do a podcast live, or let's get you guys to host of a panel session.
We're going to go to Mombasa and everything like that.
Holy, let's do it. The whole month, we're in Africa. So everybody's listening. We're in Africa. December, get your flights. South Africa, Kenya, Nigeria, Ghana. Be there.
You know we like to have fun, man.
Oh yeah, it's gonna be a party.
Crazy.
All month. Just drinking water. Your liver's going
stay hydrated.
Most definitely, yo. With that being said, the hustle is what you can control. So control your grind and control your life. I'm Alex.
I'm Owen Osinde.
I'm Alpha Ferguson.
I'm Ayo Duyule.
Bow bow.
Peace out, everybody.
Peace.
Peace.
Thank you so much for checking out this episode. Make sure you visit hustleovereverything.co and cop some fire merch that we have in the store. And I'll see you in the next episode.